You're listening to the Doheny Podcast Network, the Doheny Eye Institute, working for all to see. Your host is Jody Becker.
My guest is Dr. Vas Sada. He is the CEO and Chief Scientific Officer of the Doheny Eye Institute. Thank you so much for being here. I know you're incredibly busy, so I appreciate you taking a little time.
Real pleasure, Jody. Glad to be here to do this.
We are going to have a fairly wide-ranging conversation. I just want to add a little background about you first, Dr. Sada, because it's interesting, I think, for listeners to know where you're coming from professionally speaking and also the scope of your interests and experience. Your clinical interests include macular degeneration, diabetic retinopathy, retinal vascular disease, and inherited retinal degenerations. Research interests of yours include advanced retinal imaging technologies, image processing algorithms, image analysis and grading, retinal electrophysiology, retinal stem cell transplantation, and artificial vision devices. So one of our dreams for this podcast is to be informal. So I'm just going to say this guy has also been awarded many, many grants and awards. You can trust me on this, including the Senior Honor Award from the American Society of Retina Specialists, multiple research grants from the National Institutes of Health, plus competitive research awards from the Foundation Fighting Blindness, the Foundation for Retinal Research, and Research to Prevent Blindness. If you read Dr. Sada's blog, you know he loves to travel, which is a good thing because he is considered by his peers to be a world expert in macular diseases and retinal imaging and diagnostics. Dr. Sada, you have given over 70 visiting professorships or invited lectures, over 200 scientific presentations, and published well over 100 peer-reviewed scientific articles. You've served as editor of the electronic edition of Retina, the main textbook in your field, and held leadership positions in many scholarly societies. And with all that, you still have a minute to stop by for this conversation. I want to talk a little bit about your own research, but first, I'm wondering if you can talk for a minute about advances in gene therapy and gene editing and what the differences are there and what the potential is for eye disease patients and how you feel it might be changing or improving the prognoses.
There are other ways that you can do genetic therapies without actually putting in a new gene, and that's a new type of technology. We call it gene editing, where we found that there are naturally occurring enzymes. Again, this comes from the microbial space, from bacteria and viruses, but naturally occurring enzymes that actually can chop up DNA and actually infect. This naturally occurring sort of protein or enzyme, if you will, is actually found in bacteria, and it's what bacteria use to fight off viruses. They chew up the virus DNA that's put in. But it turns out you can harness this technology to actually make very precise cuts in the genome or a particular person's set of genes. So with gene editing, rather than just saying, okay, well, this gene doesn't work, let me put in a working gene, let me just throw a bunch of the working gene into the cell, you instead say, let me clip out, just cut out very precisely the gene that doesn't work, and then let me replace that with a proper gene. So you actually insert it directly back into the genome of those cells. And you might say, well, why do you need to do that? Why isn't gene therapy by the first way that you describe good enough? Well, it depends on the particular disease. What if it's a disease where, you know, the bad gene makes a misfolded protein or something bad that kills a cell, and just putting in good copies of the gene don't get rid of the bad stuff? So if you have a disease that works that way, then you actually need to clip out the bad gene. And that's where, you know, gene editing then opens up the possibility of treating a whole host of different types of genetic disorders. And that's really a hot area. I mean, I'm really excited that we're involved very heavily in the gene therapy space here at Doheny. And I think that's an area you can expect we will continue to expand in terms of our vision science research programs going forward.
And for patients, how do you feel that the gene editing might change the prognosis?
Well, if you have an inherited retinal disorder where you've got a genetic defect that's producing a lot of bad or toxic materials, gene editing may be your only hope to try to preserve your vision. If it's a vision-threatening issue. So I think this has major implications for patients who have inherited retinal diseases. Now, I want to be clear to anyone listening to the podcast that for gene editing, you know, we have to do a bit more safety work. We have to make sure that we don't, you know, have any untoward SNPs or clips out of the genome or genes out where we don't want them. We don't think that happens. But again, you know, we're very careful and meticulous in doing that kind of work. But ultimately, I think it offers real hope for patients who have inherited retinal diseases and maybe inherited diseases, period, across the body.
Thank you for those descriptions and also just how that might impact patients who are listening to your explanation. I do want to talk about your own research, and I'm wondering if you can start out by talking a little bit about how the work at the Doheny Image Reading Center is evolving.
Imaging or capturing pictures of the eye is a huge part of ophthalmology. I mean, the eye is a very unique structure in that it has transparent components that allow you to take photographs with light of different parts of the eye, including parts of the eye that are deep inside the eye. And so it turns out, you know, the analogy of a picture is worth a thousand words could never be truer in the sense that, you know, when you capture an image of an eye, you can describe things about the eye much better than you could by writing, you know, several paragraphs. And in fact, that's how we diagnose and follow a lot of different diseases. We take a picture, we do a treatment, we look to see, you know, how did things change on the picture. It's just a more precise way of being able to track and follow things. And as it turns out, though, you know, you might capture a picture of a patient with a diseased eye, but it turns out how I interpret it may be different from how one of my colleagues interprets it. And that, again, creates that challenge. That's why we have those kind of consensus meetings. So how do you deal with this in the context of a study? Let's say you're doing a study for a new drug and you want to see this drug shrinks retinal swelling. Well, okay, we have great technology to measure retinal swelling. How do you determine how much it's shrunk by? How do you, you know, precisely measure that and know that it's reliable and repeatable, that if I measure it today and I come back and measure the same image tomorrow, I'll get the same answer? Because you need that. You have to know it's reproducible in order to be confident that a change that you later say occurred is actually real. And so that's where image reading centers have developed, to provide this kind of very, to train people using very rigorous methods so they always analyze the same image the same way, and then use that resource to actually analyze images for clinical studies to demonstrate whether a treatment works or not. But also, the Image Reading Center provides a great source of expertise for analyzing images for very specialized imaging research, to actually use the images not just to demonstrate whether the treatment works or not, but to actually understand something fundamental about the biology of the disease that might point the way to new targets for treatment or understanding disease mechanisms and why the disease occurs in the first place. And that's really become a great research interest of mine. We use imaging in this way to better understand a whole host of diseases, ranging from glaucoma to ocular surface diseases, to diabetic retinopathy, retinal vein occlusions, retinal degenerations, and of course, my greatest interest, which is age-related macular degeneration, which is, of course, the leading cause of blindness in the United States. And we're trying to uncover, you know, how we can use diagnostics to identify the earliest signs of the disease and the earliest signs of progression, so we can understand, you know, why do cells die, and then potentially devise better treatment approaches to prevent cell death. Because, you know, it's always better to prevent than to treat after the fact.
And doctor, can I ask you, with our aging population, do you feel a certain urgency even more so than you might have during your years of medical training?
Yes. I mean, there are many of us who believe that if you live long enough, well, just about all of us will get some signs of macular degeneration. So absolutely, because people are living healthier, they're living longer, and you want to make sure that your last years of life, especially when you're an active person, are really enjoyable. I mean, the goal, you know, it's kind of like, how can you make the golden years really golden again? And there is a great sense of urgency. We have, you know, again, my clinical practice is also focused on macular degeneration. I see so many patients with macular degeneration, and they're all terrified of going blind from this problem. And so I feel a great sense of urgency that we've got to be successful in this research, and I know that we will be.
Can you talk about the sources of funding for this kind of work and how that might have shifted in recent years and where most of your doctors are looking for their money?
Well, traditionally, especially in big university and academic centers like ours, traditionally we've been funded through federal and government funding sources. But, because of, realities that occur with variations in the economy and political reasons and the like, overall, when you correct for inflation, funding to the NIH has gone down over the years. And that's created a real challenge. And we've had to diversify our portfolio of funding. We've found that to really make the research engine go, we really count heavily on philanthropy. And that's certainly a big component of our research engine, whether it's individual donors, and they represent a substantial part and key, actually quite really key for making vision research go. Can't emphasize that enough, but also private foundations. There are many organizations that have supported us through the years. And then the other big piece, aside from philanthropy foundations and federal funding or federal and state funding, government funding, is, of course, industry. And we've found ways to partner with industry where, in industry, obviously, they're key partners in this because you can come up with a great idea, come up with a great potential treatment, but if there's not a commercial partner who can actually commercialize the treatment, it never gets to our patients, which would be a disaster. And so partnering with industry is key. And many times, industry is very interested in supporting even the early research to try to figure out these paths. And so, for example, as I said, the Reading Center does all these clinical trials. Well, who's sponsoring a lot of these studies? Well, they're industry trying to get their new drugs approved. And so just like that, you can go to industry to support other research programs as well. And I think that's the reality of 21st century vision research and ophthalmology is you have to have funding from multiple sources. I mean, we'll always, as a center of great academic excellence, we'll always be counting on the NIH and federal funding, always count on philanthropy. But, we also have to consider these other sources as well.
And in your opinion, is that the healthiest way to go with this diversified sort of portfolio of supporters?
Yeah, I think that, we have a very sacred mission and obligation to find cures and to conserve and preserve and restore eyesight. That's the mission, the Doheny Eye Institute. And given that that's our sacred obligation, we need to make sure that we have a diverse portfolio that can ensure that we have the funding to achieve this mission.
My guest is Dr. Vas Sada, CEO and Chief Scientific Officer of the Doheny Eye Institute. Many thanks for your time and your insights. We'll continue this conversation and talk more about the collaborations of Doheny doctors in our next episode.
The Doheny Eye Institute, at the forefront in eradicating eye disease for nearly 70 years, is dedicated to providing state-of-the-art clinical services and supporting leading researchers in the quest for treatments that stabilize and improve the precious sense of sight. Doheny is now affiliated with UCLA Stein Eye Institute. For more information about our doctors and their innovative work in the quest for better vision, visit our website, doheny.org.